With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Join me on the podcast this week, our go-to man, everyone knows him, Big V. How you doing, man?
I'm all right, man. I'm trying to enjoy these last few days of somewhat warm weather. I'm playing tennis later today. I don't know if it'll be the last time I play tennis.
Okay.
We'll see, man. We'll see. But it's dark times ahead.
What's your tennis game like? Are you a Milos Raonic? You just like only serve and then you can't do anything else? Or what are you doing?
No, I'm kind of the opposite, man. My serve sucks.
Oh, okay. And okay. All right.
It's like, yeah, I have like the rare good day, but mostly it's just my ground strokes. I think my forehand is pretty decent. My backhand is like okay. But mainly it's my, I just run around and get to everything.
Okay. All right. I don't know enough about tennis to make any more comparisons there. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I know, I mean, you're a pretty good ping pong player. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, that's
transferable.
That's transferable. Yeah. Yeah. All the guys I knew that played tennis, you know, could play a little bit of ping pong too. Shout out Joe Wolf on me and him used to go at it like we used to do it in the office. All right, so Raptors, look, there's not that much going on. I'm going to be completely honest with you, but there are rumors. And I kind of want to get to some of these rumors because I think, honestly, a lot of them have just come up because it is that time in the year where, you know, you get some free agency reports. By the way, I'm really enjoying how much the fake news economy has expanded. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to hate on people necessarily, but I'm just like, if you're not reputable and you just come up with some of these sources, people are so desperate right now, like they're going to run with everything.
Yeah.
So shout out Legion Hoops, man.
Legion Hoops, I'm like, why are people running with this?
I know. No, but the thing is like, okay, so it's like one big organization, but then they got individual people now too. And I don't know, man, maybe they do have legitimate sources. I don't, you know what I mean? That's more sources than I have, but like,
yeah,
I just never heard of these guys before. So we'll see if they're right or not. But so I want to get to some of these free agency targets that are apparently the Raptors may or may not be in for. You know, there's some trade rumors for other players. So we'll get to that. And then I think that will kind of give us a good jumping off point to sort of looking at the Raptors sort of roster contribution and construction and sort of seeing how the Raptors are built per position going forward, right? So we can look at the future of all five positions and sort of where they stand. But let's get back to the biggest one. I think the most tangible one, and again, I'm really couching that statement tangible because this is not from like Woj or Shams or Chris Haynes or Mark Stein or any of these guys. But Victor Oladipo apparently is in trade rumors. Now, he's been in trade rumors for a couple of years now, I feel like, ever since he got injured, ever since the Pacers offered him some money and he turned it down. It seems like he wants more. He's on Instagram talking with Fat Joe. You remember Fat Joe?
Of course.
Of course. I've never seen anyone live off lean of honestly, Fat Joe is living off Lean Back like the 08 Celtics are living off that 1 year. Like, yo, why do I always have to hear about Lean Back? Yeah, that was a great song, man. But like, I listened to that when I was in high school, like middle school.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, Victor Oladipo's out there talking to Fat Joe, talking about how he wants to win, man. It's all about championships, not about money. And then there's some rumors, you know, again, these are not necessarily very credible rumors, but linking Victor Oladipo to Toronto. First off, we can start here. Okay. How much do you think injuries have hurt Victor Oladipo's career and sort of where do you think he's going to be at? Because I don't think he's even been fully healthy since he screwed up his right quad in his right knee.
First off, this is the most prepared pod we've ever done together. Like, I saw the notes.
Bro, when there's nothing else really going on, I really got to dig in. I can't just be like, what do you think?
I never did this before. But yeah, Depot, like he's 28 right now. Obviously, the last two seasons, you know, combined, he's played like 50 games, right? And so you wonder how much that's going to impact him, because he's obviously pretty close to 30 now. So I personally am concerned with his long-term outlook. And so, well, at least concerned enough to not be serious about pursuing a trade for him right now. I think the other thing, too, that I think about going into 2021 is if you're looking for flexibility, you trade for him now, his cap hold would be $31.5 million, because his salary is 21, right? So you got to take 150% of that as the cap hold.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be a big issue in terms of the Raptors' flexibility for 2021. So I think that's another thing that dissuades it. And so potentially, you know, I know I saw you throw out, you know, Norm in a first rounder. Maybe there's another piece that you throw in to make it fit. Fred in sort of a sign and trade would be the other option, because realistically, it doesn't make sense to have Kyle and Fred and Depot, right? So I think that's the other thing that you would consider if you were to look at a deal for him. But yeah, personally, I don't see the Raptors pursuing him. I don't think there's enough there to believe he elevates the ceiling, at least to the point where, you know, does he elevate the ceiling, and is he worth sort of taking away your flexibility for 2021? And so for both those reasons, I wouldn't really consider him.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, we touched on a lot of things there. I mean, there's a lot of problems with this deal. First off, you know, how much are you giving up on this, right? Because again, maybe we can get to that at the end of this, because we can kind of talk about his game and sort of his injuries and stuff like that. But I actually remember watching the injury, because it happened against the Raptors. Like Pascal was guarding him, taking transition. And yeah,
it's kind of like that Jaylen Brown play.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know how Jaylen Brown sustained throughout the entire playoffs, because he took a couple of big hits.
Yeah.
Not just in the Raptors series, but also in the Heat series. But yeah, I mean, his knee just gave out, and it was bad, because like about a month before that injury happened, that happened in January, in that December of that year, 2018, he had a right knee injury. He missed 11 games, and it just looked like he was rushing back. You know, like it seemed like he was trying to, you know, I don't know, man, earn his money, trying to keep his team competitive, everything like that. But I just feel bad for him. And the thing is, he hasn't been right really ever since, because he returned, you know, earlier this year, January 29th, but, you know, he wasn't himself. He was playing limited minutes. He couldn't really go hard. And then even when the NBA season started coming back up, there were sort of rumors of, like, is he going to actually play, or is he going to sit out the restart to rehab his knee? Now, maybe he was trying to sit out the restart to sort of secure a trade or whatever. Who knows? But I also just truly believe he wasn't that fully healthy. And so, you know, I think, man, for a guy like that, so we can talk about his game, really. He's really athletic, right? And he's like a super athlete. Like, for a guy who's not that big, maybe 6'3", this guy's regularly dunking on people in transition, you know, like elevating, you know, he's blocking people at the rim. Like, he's just a hyper athlete. And so if you're going to talk about a serious knee injury that's going to knock him out like almost 2 years, to a guy who's predicated on athleticism, then that concerns me right there. And then really the other question I had with Oladipo was, like, how good is Oladipo really? Because if you look at it, the 17-18 season, the first year he got to Indiana when he got traded for Paul George, a really fantastic player. I mean, I believe he made the All-NBA team. But, you know, he looked like he was making a huge step up. Because honestly, before that, when he was in Orlando, when he was in OKC, he wasn't actually that special of a player, despite the fact he was picked number two overall in a bit of a weak draft. I'll just pose that to you. Like, how good is Oladipo really, when you kind of look at his career? Because are we looking at an all-star guy? Are we looking at an all-NBA guy? Or are we just looking at maybe even a guy who's even below that?
I'd say he's still an all-star guy.
Okay.
I think, you know, if he's sorted out his injury situation, then I'm not too concerned about, you know, his ability to get to the rim. I think he's still got enough shiftiness and athleticism to, you know, make that a big part of his game. I really like his mid-range game. I think that's something, again, you know, when people recognize that athleticism and say, okay, we're going to pack the paint a bit more, that ability to pull up, I think he's really got it from the mid-range. And I think the interesting thing I found is I was looking at his three-point shot, and the non-corner threes, he's consistently at 34%, which I think is pretty good. And then and his corner threes, it was 40% in 2015-16, 44% in 16-17, then 54% in 17-18, that amazing season that you mentioned. Mm. But the last two seasons, it's 30% and 20%. So that's a weird one where, like, the corner three is the easiest three that three-point look that you can get. So if he's been at 34% above the break for his entire career, I think that, you know, that 30 and 20 is not reflective of what he is as a shooter. So I would still expect him to be like a 36, 37% shooter overall from the outside. And so I think, you know, when you think about the Raptors' needs, that dynamism at the guard position, that ability to pull up in the mid-range, those are things that are that will be very valuable to the Raptors potentially, right? And so I think there's still enough of that to be enticing. But obviously, as I mentioned, the other factors before are why I would sort of go hard into looking for a deal for him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you could argue it honestly either way. You know, because if you just look at the profile of this game, A, obviously he's talented enough to play on the Raptors, man. Like, there's no question about that. Even if you factor in the fact that, okay, he's had a serious knee injury, we'll see what's there going forward. He's just a very talented player. He's a player the Raptors don't currently have as a shot creator. He can get his own shot. You know, I thought, honestly, in that 17-18 season, he was hitting a lot of pull-up threes, and that seemed to be his go-to move. Like, he has such a really quick first step to get by his guy that people kind of sag off of him. And that year, he shot the pull-up three really well. You know, again, that could be a bit of an outlier. But, I mean, ultimately, we're talking about a guy who is really athletic, especially for his position. You know, he can get his own shot. You know, as you mentioned, can get that mid-range shot. He can finish at the rim. There's a lot of good things to like about Victor. It's just the injury risk is just big on this front, man. And I think that's going to really hurt him in a sense, because he was really gearing up to have a big payday. And yeah, I think he deserved it, absolutely. But I think, honestly, if you just look at Indiana's cap sheet, it's pretty clear they don't have space for this man. First off, Indiana is a team that famously does not pay the tax. They're a small market club. You know, their owner, Herb Simon, I think he has like malls across America or something. So he's not that rich, okay? Obviously, he's rich compared to either of us. But, you know, I don't think, you know, Indiana's in a position to really pay the tax. And I think that's where you hear some of these trade rumors coming out from, because, I mean, Indiana has a lot of money on the books. I believe like over $120 million already. And, you know, they just signed Miles Turner to a bigger contract. They signed Domantas Sabonis a bigger contract. They signed Malcolm Brogdon to a bigger contract. They just don't have that much space on their books. And so I could see Victor moving on. I know he keeps saying that, you know what, I'm a Pacer, but let's be real, man. You might be moving on. Okay, let's circle back to this question then. What would a trade package look like for you? What would you think realistically Indiana might be intrigued by, and where you as a Raptor fan, as a Raptor journalist, would actually feel is a fair return for the Raptors as well?
So I think I would lean towards the Fred sign and trade.
Okay.
Because I think if you're Indiana, I feel like Fred and Malcolm Brogdon, they would complement each other actually pretty well. And especially with Fred having a bigger guard next to him, I think that would play to both their strengths and, you know, alleviate some of the concerns you'd have with that you normally would with a small backcourt. Right? I mean, as good as amazing as Kyle was, these playoffs, it did hurt at times, right? Having such a small backcourt, especially against the length of the Celtics. And so I think if you can pair Kyle with Oladipo, I think, you know, that would be a really strong backcourt if Oladipo's back to the level we expect. So, yeah, something along the lines of Fred plus, you know, I don't know what it would take beyond that. whether it be a second round pick or something like that. For Depot, because again, he's heading into the final year of his deal, right? So you're not going to sacrifice too much either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I really don't think the Raptors would have to give that much more beyond that, to be honest. I guess my question with the sign of trade is like, A, I think you need the Pacers obviously to agree to that, right? And you need Fred to agree to sign there too. That's a bigger thing too. Fred needs to agree to sign in that situation.
Yeah.
And then I think the other thing is just, like I mentioned, man, Indiana is like, they're really, really close to the cap. They're really close to the cap. And they're just, they don't have that much money. You know, currently on the books, they have $127 million for next year. So that's like right against that tax, if not above it. We'll see sort of where the projections, everything come out after this year. And that's including Victor's deal, which is $21 million next year. I mean, I think realistically, Fred probably gets that same number. So I don't think that necessarily keeps him, that doesn't save any money for them. So that's where my hesitations are. A, I don't know if Fred wants to sign there. And B, I don't know. Because you know what I mean? Like, you think Fred is going to be moving FVV merch, Bettering Yourself merch in in Hoosier territory?
Have you been? I mean, he'll be closer. He'll be closer to home.
He will be. I mean, I guess so. Yeah, I guess that is true.
Just one step closer to Chicago.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I mean.
Well, Rockford. I should specify Rockford because he always makes that distinction, right?
That is true. That is true. Shout out Rockford, the Mississauga of Chicago. Actually, I don't even know if that's true or not, but I used to go to Chicago quite a bit.
I mean, it fits. He went from Rockford to the 905. It fits.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's got that t-shirt, too, that on the FVV merch where he has all the cities that he's played in and stuff like that. So, yeah, okay. So, for me, honestly, I think because Indiana needs some cap relief, for me, I put together something like Norm plus a future first-round pick. The first-round pick would be protected. Or if they want this year's pick, if you want the 29th pick, congratulations, Indiana, you can have it. Because I don't actually think he's – obviously, he's a better player than Norm. Like, even with Norm improving this year, he's still a better player than Norm. But I'm not 100,000% sold on Victor Oladipo. It's just that one season is so much of an outlier relative to everything else that I don't really know. Maybe it was a player that was on the up trajectory and on the upswing before he got the injury, but – there's just something about him. I mean, the times that I've seen Victor play against the Raptors since then, he hasn't really been a significant factor, which I don't think is surprising to anybody who's following the Pacers. I'm sure they will tell you that sometimes Victor's been hurting the team because he's kind of thrown off the rhythm of the team. And obviously that's not fair. That's not the best of Victor, but I just don't know what that is anymore. And I think, honestly, my other thing is I just don't know how much the Raptors want to invest at the shooting guard position in terms of their resources and their cap. Because if you're going to trade for Victor, you're saying that you want to re-sign Victor, right? And, you know, as you mentioned, that cap hold is tricky to work with. Now, the thing with the cap hold is if Giannis does agree to sign with the Raptors in 2021, you can then sort of negotiate with everyone at the same time, and you can lock Victor into a cheaper deal that's below the cap hold, sign him first, then sign Giannis. There's all sorts of things you can do with the cap. But
you'd have to renounce him.
No, you can re-sign him first.
No, I think that's the purpose of the cap hold.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right. Well, I mean, that's an issue then. I don't know what else to say. That's a real issue.
I think that's why they did that, right? At the 150% to stop teams from doing that.
Mm. Okay, so, well, maybe you work out with an extension with Victor this offseason then, because I think he was on a more than a 3-year deal. Yeah, so you can work out an extension with him, I guess, but I don't know if he wants to, if that's enough money for him again.
Yeah.
This is just tough. Exactly. Right. And I think you know, the bigger issue is just, I don't know how much the Raptors need to invest at the shooting guard position, because you know, if you're talking about a max contract for Pascal, I mean, Fred, hopefully he's here. He's on a bigger deal. And then, you know, is that third guy for you going to be a shooting guard? And then how are you going to build the rest of your roster? And and obviously OG's up for an extension as well. You know, Victor's a really good player, but I just don't know if that's the risk I want to take. So for me personally, I'm kind of passing on Victor, even if it is a Norm plus future first. Like, yeah, I wouldn't hate it, but I you know, there's some real significant risk there.
No, I'm with you, man. I wouldn't really give up anything for Victor. I think you know, this entire offseason in general, the first question you got to ask yourself with any type of trade idea is how does this affect the 2021 cap?
Yeah. And that brings me to our next shooting guard, who is maybe or maybe not on the market, probably on the market. Let's be real. Buddy Hield. So the first issue right off the top is he makes $23 million in 21-22 that season, where hopefully you're trying to fit in Giannis. So that's already a big hurdle. What do you think about Buddy Hield? Because I think on one hand, you can look at it as he is one of the most prolific three-point shooters in the NBA, gets him up at a high volume. But at the same time, I'm like, does he do anything else? Is he good on defense? Like, I don't really know. So what do you think about Buddy Hield's game, first off?
Yeah, like you said, he's very good at the one specific thing he does really well, right? Mm-hmm. One of the, I think in terms of the volume three-point shooters in the league, he's one of the best. I think he set himself up as that. But I think when I look at what he represents off court, his personality, I just don't think the Raptors have shown a tendency to sign or pursue those type of guys. You know, you look at the roster the last few years, it's always been high character, strong leadership type guys. And I don't think Buddy Hield fits that. How much of the issues, you know, with the way he calls stuff out publicly, all that kind of stuff, how much do you attribute that to just being in Sacramento with a franchise that hasn't been able to get itself together for a long time now? I don't know, but I think I don't think he fits the roster from a personality type. There, he obviously addresses the need with his ability to score, but I don't know if it's necessarily something that'd be worth investing in, considering what you'd have to give up.
The comments in public, I mean, I can't hate really on that necessarily. I think his negotiations with the Kings last year trying to get an extension became really public, and I think he made it so. But again, you're dealing with Vlade, you're dealing with a franchise that, you know, whatever. But he did kind of take it a little bit too far, you know. I think some of the comments that were ultimately, he didn't even get that much more money than initially offered, so that's unfortunate. I mean, he clashed with coaches, like, you know, him and Dave Yeager apparently didn't see eye to eye. Then yeah. He got benched this year by Luke Walton. I don't think Luke Walton's a very good coach, quite honestly, but, you know, he clashed with Luke Walton as well. So, I mean, you know, all that other stuff. But I don't think there's anything necessarily – I don't think it's the wrong personality or anything else like that. I just think that some of these things are unfortunate. Again, when you're in the midst of a bad organization, like, everyone's going to stink. You know what I mean? So I'm going to keep him the benefit of the doubt there. But yeah, I mean, in terms of his game, okay, so I guess what I'm looking at is I'm watching the playoffs right now. Obviously, I'm watching the finals right now. I feel like one-dimensional shooters, especially guys that shoot a lot of threes, it's hard to replicate that same success in the playoffs. What do you think about that, first of all? I mean, obviously, Klay and Steph, that's a different scenario altogether. Those guys are like historical shooters and everything like that, and they have each other to play off of. But when we're looking at a guy like Buddy Hield, he doesn't necessarily have the profile of a playoff contributor to me, or at least if he contributes, it's not going to be the same impact he has in the regular season.
Yeah, I'm with you, because I think the number one thing you look at is, especially with a shooter, is how hard are they willing to work when they don't have the ball. And I think he's someone that kind of switches off when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, or when the play is not being run for him, or, you know, he's not running off the screen. So, you know, I think those are aspects of his game that he needs to improve. And so as long as he doesn't add those aspects to his game, it's going to be pretty one-dimensional, and it's going to be pretty easy to scheme for in the postseason, like you said. So in terms of addressing those needs, because let's face it, the Raptors, you know, they're not a team that is sort of trying to figure stuff out for the regular season anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything is about, how does this help us in the postseason? How does this make us better? How does this help us win a round or two or three or whatever it is, right? And so I just don't see enough there to validate pursuing him for, you know, what's essentially a stopgap year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think his age is necessarily a problem. I just want to point out that he had a bit of an age controversy when he just randomly
knowing his age is the problem.
Well, that was the issue. He just randomly revealed he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm a year older than I said. You know, I think there was a New York. I was looking up Buddy Hield in preparation for this podcast because, as you mentioned, this is the first time I've actually prepared extensively for a pod. And I came across a New York, an NBC Sports headline that said Buddy Hield is turning, a New York Times headline. Sorry, my bad. Buddy Hield's age grew by 2 years on Monday, the New York Times. That's not something you want to go in the Times about. But that's not his fault, I guess, necessarily. You know, get your money, man. Listen. But I don't know. I see holes in his game. Look, obviously, he's a really good 3-point shooter, and you're not going to take away that entirely. But, if you are one dimensional in the playoffs, that's going to be tough. I'm going to need you to defend. He has not been a good defender for his entire career. And again, he's played on like New Orleans back when they were nothing and Sacramento, which speaks for itself. Like you're just probably not going to defend because there's no culture of defending. But at the same time, he just has not shown any inclination to defend. Like one thing that's concerning to me is just that despite the fact that he actually does contribute a lot offensively with the shooting, he does move off ball, stuff like that. He's pretty crafty. I think he's developed a little bit as a passer this year. He can occasionally get a shot off the dribble now, but he's been a negative contributor because his defense is that bad. And after watching DeMar, you know, kind of a similar profile player, DeMar obviously got his points totally differently. But if you are not willing to defend, I don't know if I want you on the Raptors, man. Even if you are as good as you are, right, with Buddy and his shooting. And I think with Buddy, his shooting is, it's impressive that he's able to scale up his shooting, right? Because he went from 4.6 attempts in his rookie year to 5.1 to 7.9 to 9.6. So the fact that he's able to scale up his shooting and his volume is really impressive considering he's still shooting 39% from the field or from three. And for his career, he's at 41% from three. He's a good shooter, but he doesn't necessarily get his own shot in a way that, you know, if you look at other guys who are, you know, approaching 10, maybe even like a James Harden, like, you know, 12, 13 threes a game, those guys can get their own shots off. And for Buddy, he, even though he has scaled up his 3-point shooting, most of these threes are assisted, which, look, obviously you would prefer most of your assists to be, or most of your shots to be assisted, but he still, to me, feels like a guy who, you know, is mostly a catch and shoot player. He doesn't really create off the dribble like that. And I don't know, I'm going to need him to be a little bit more dynamic as a playmaker, because again, if you aren't contributing defensively, you got to be complete offensively. And I don't really think he is that, you know?
I'm totally with you, man. Yeah. Again, you look at plus players who fit the roster and you think about the Raptors' future as a whole. You look across the board, whether, you know, I expect Fred to re-sign. I really do. So if you look at Fred, OG, Pascal, you know, with that core, you have such a high floor because of what they bring to the table defensively. I don't think you would want to, you know, sort of reduce that in any way. And so if that's the standard, I think that's what you want to bring to the table across the board. And we know Nick Nurse demands that from everyone who's on the team. And so that fit, again, I just don't see it. It's sexy to talk about. It's fun to talk about all this stuff. And, you know, I'm sure there are other 3-point options that you can look at and say, you look at what the Raptors did in this postseason and the half court offense, and there's ways that they can help alleviate those concerns. But for defensive reasons, for the ways postseason defenses challenge you to score and, you know, take away your first option, I don't see Buddy Hield as that difference maker.
Yeah. And then just the last thing with the defense, because I did some real research, man. I was reading Kings blogs, bro. I was reading Sacktown Royalty, okay? And so obviously he's been a really divisive player. Honestly, the discourse around him, I was reading some of the fan comments, kind of reminded me a lot of the DeMar stuff. It's like, he brings a lot of offense, but what's he taking off the table? And then I was like, how bad could he be defensively? I saw this chart. And so this is in terms of defended shots, the differential in terms of how much it affects your shooting percentage. So he's defending a guy, shooting the ball. Is he and how is he compared to league average, right? And when you look at in terms of when he's defending 3-point shots, opponents shoot 4.4% better on than league average, which is the eighth worst mark in the NBA. At the rim, opponents shoot 12.7% better when Buddy's defending them, which is the worst mark in the NBA. And overall, opponents shoot 7.6% better than league average when being guarded by Buddy Hield in general, which is, again, the worst mark in the NBA. Like, I can't go back to that, man. I'm sorry. I can't. I mean, he does bring a lot. I mean, offensively, I think, you know, he's a guy who's growing. I think, especially when you have the ability to shoot the three so well, you can do so many other things offensively that everything else can come after that. You can develop a floater. You can get to the rim. You can cut. You can play off ball. I love all that about Buddy's game. But, yeah, for the money and for the fact that he's just so bad on defense, I'm going to have to pass on that too. But
he's a 6'6 Lou Will, man.
I mean,
at least Lou Will can operate in the pick and roll.
I was going to say, yeah. And I need that pick and roll game from Buddy. Because, again, if you are going to be that bad defensively, as I mentioned, you got to play better offensively. And he's not that complete offensively. So I'm going to have to say pass on that. In terms of big men, so Montrezl Harrell has been, I would say, softly linked. And what I mean by that is here are some of the links, okay? He wore an Auston Matthews jersey once. He followed the Raptors on Instagram. And his AAU team has a Raptors logo. This is from the Chris Bosh days, you know, with the basketball and the three claws. You know, just I love, you know, every time I look at that logo, I'm like, oh, yeah, Jared Jack used to wear that. Yeah, you know, so you always want to be associated with that. I mean, yeah, so these are hardly concrete rumors. What do you think about Montrezl Harrell? So he's a free agent coming up. He just won sixth man of the year, even though he's a seventh man. What do you think about his game overall?
I like Montrezl Harrell as a piece off the bench. I think a lot of people are going to get caught up in the Clippers postseason and what happened in the bubble. But I put Harrell in sort of that spectrum, on the deep end of the spectrum with the guys like Pascal, who, for me, the way I looked at it is there were obviously going to be two opposite ends of the spectrum where you have someone like Luka Doncic who goes from all-star level to MVP level, and that's the really positive side of it. And then you're going to have the really negative side of it with this stoppage that happened. And we saw how it impacted Pascal. We saw, I mean, frankly, I thought it impacted the Bucks as a team. And so I think there's other pieces too. So I would put him in that category with the COVID situation. And I just didn't think who he was in the bubble was reflective of who he was before that during the regular season. So I would cut him some slack there. I think he's a nice piece. The question comes down to what type of money does he command right now in the free agent market, and how long a term is he looking for? If he's coming off a sixth man of the year and he's saying, hey, this is my chance to get a long-term deal, 4 or 5 years, looking at, 12 to 15 mil, then I would shy away from that. Mm-hmm. If he's someone that's still kind of open to a 2-year deal where now you're entering free agency again at 29, 30, and you've got a chance to finish up with a really strong contract to your career and maybe, you know, find another level to your game, then that's something that I would at least look into, considering the Raptors' needs, right? He can be sort of a small ball five when you need it. Mm-hmm. And obviously we know he's more of a four. He'd be a nice backup option to Pascal.
Yeah. A couple things. I mean, first off, in terms of what he's going to look for in free agency, I think I have a good idea. He was a late draft pick, second round, 32nd pick by the Houston Rockets, 2015. So you're not making a lot of money, especially when you're signing second round deals with Daryl Morey. He loves to sign them to the 4-year minimum contract. I don't know how he does that, but it's kind of exploitive, whatever. And then when he signed with the Clippers, when he got re-signed with the Clippers, he signed a 2-year, $12 million deal. So for his career so far, he's made $15 million in terms of career earnings in 5 seasons. This man's going to be looking for some money. And I think he deserves it because he's played really well. He's really made a career of himself. And I actually kind of like Montrezl as a player. I think there's a lot of things that he does that's quite good. One thing in particular, the pick and roll game. He's scoring 1.31 points per possession in the pick and roll game as the finisher. So that's an incredible mark, and especially for a guy who does it as primarily his option. Everyone knows he's rolling to the rim. Teams are just having a hard time stopping him. And to put that in comparison, like maybe Serge Ibaka was probably the Raptors' best pick and roll option in terms of their centers finishing. He was at 1.00 points per play. So Montrez can really do some damage there. He's a really physical player at the rim. You know, he's good on the offensive glass. He's undersized, but again, really physical. Honestly, he's grown a bit of a driving game. Like, he can give him the ball a little bit in the elbows, and he's going one-on-one, especially against a smaller defender. He can kind of bully his way there. So that's all good, and I think he really would bring some nice things to the Raptors. I think offensive rebounding, something the Raptors don't really have a lot of, he brings that too. But I mean, again, does he really fit the profile of a Raptor player, right? I think defensively, he's going to be limited because he's 6'8", and I don't think he's as bad as he looked in the playoffs. I mean, like, you can't really be asking a guy post-COVID to be guarding Nikola Jokic, who's like, has how many, like, even after Jokic lost some weight, like, he's probably still got 50 pounds on Montrez. Like, come on, man.
I mean, let's just face it, man. Jokic is a beast.
Yeah, and also, who is stopping Jokic physically?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Nobody. So,
yeah.
Even Anthony Davis couldn't do it. So,
yeah, no, they had Dwight Howard out here acting like a 7-foot Patrick Beverley to try to throw Jokic off his game. But I don't think he's that great of a defender. I think he's more offensively focused than defensively focused. And then I think, what is the ultimate role for Montrez going to even be on the Raptors? You know what I mean? Like, assuming Giannis comes and you still have Pascal, like, where is he playing? Are you playing Pascal with 3 then? Like, what are you doing? And if you're signing into big money just for him to come off the bench, that doesn't necessarily make sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, part of why I said the 2-year deal is because, you know, it gives you a chance where, okay, now if you got to make the money work next year, he's appealing as an expiring contract, right? Mm. So there's still that flexibility. And so, you know, if he starts looking at 3 or 4 years, then it's like, okay, why wouldn't you just re-sign Serge then, right? I think the money would be similar, and I think the fit would be way better for Serge. Yeah. So I think it really comes down to whether Harrell would consider a short-term contract. And if not, you just move on.
Yeah. And I just doubt he does that because he's going to be looking for some money.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it. He played really well. I don't like the fit that great either, because I think he's going to play in the same area as Pascal is going to play. So it's going to hurt the spacing for Pascal a little bit. And then, yeah, when you put Giannis in that mix too, I mean, like, that's just too many cooks in the kitchen, man. Everyone's going to be trying to post up and trying to drive. So, Montrez is a nice player, but I don't really see it working here. And then the last guy I kind of wanted to quickly touch on before we look at positions is just, so Miles Turner, he's probably on the market too. There's some reports that he's on the market. Again, I wouldn't be surprised anybody from Indiana gets traded because of the fact that they just don't have that much money and they have $127 million on their books. Miles Turner, he's competing in that center position with Domantas Sabonis. They play them together. It doesn't really work that great for them together. He makes $18 million per year flat for the next 3 years, which is honestly a pretty reasonable rate for a guy with his skills. But I don't know. Are you a glass half empty guy on Miles Turner or glass half full? Because I'm definitely glass half empty.
Yeah, this is interesting because I'm glass half full. Okay. I legitimately like Miles Turner. Probably not as much as Joe Wolfson, but
yo, bro, I heard this man say he will take Miles Turner over Kristaps Porzingis, and I had to turn off Pound the Rock for like 5 minutes just to walk around. Man, I didn't agree with that.
No, I think Turner's defense is really good. I think he's, you know, one of the better big man defenders in the league. I think his shot prevention is underrated. Like, I think he's actually like Marc Gasol like in terms of just getting deterring guards and forwards from even like considering a shot at the rim. You know what I mean? So I think he's really solid. And on top of that, he gives you like a couple blocks a game. So I think he's a really good rim protector. He can pop the three from the outside. This is one where I think when you look at the fit and in terms of the way Nick Nurse likes to play, I think he'd love to have a center like Miles Turner. Because, again, someone that can defend the pick and roll, execute different defensive schemes, allows you to you know, space out the offense, doesn't need that many touches. And so, you know, I think he had a challenge this year where Sabonis was playing so well that it was like, hey, we're going to have Sabonis operate out of the post. We're going to need you to be outside and help Sabonis just facilitate the offense. And I think he was really effective at doing that. He probably, his 2018-19 season was probably better than this past season, but I think he's still a really good big. 18 mil a year, I think there's value there.
That's totally fair. I mean, first off, he's mad young. He's only 24 years old.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there is fair value there. So yeah, I'd be very open to Miles Turner being the starting five next year, man.
Well, I put more glass half empty on him. I wrote in the notes here that he's a Black Bargnani. Maybe that's unfair. Maybe that's unfair. I don't know. I was watching some of those games again against the Raptors, because obviously I'm going to watch those games more closely. Raptors played Indiana a couple times, man. I was never impressed by Miles Turner. But, I mean, again, that's hard to just judge a man against the league's second-best defense. I think offensively there's some real holes in his game. Because, like, he can shoot the three. He's not necessarily a prolific three-point shooter. Like, he shot four threes a game this year, 34%. You know, he's a guy that people are going to leave open. He reminds me a little bit of Brook Lopez, actually, and then a profile of his game. A little bit more mobile than Brook, but not that much more, surprisingly. Not really much of a passer. As you mentioned, he can block shots. He can deter shots. Legitimately defensive, I think he's good. But offensively, it's just weird. First off, for a big man, to shoot 45% from the field as a big man is just a little odd to me. I know he shoots a lot of threes, but, you know, he's never really been that efficient of a shooter overall, I would say. Doesn't really get to the free throw line. I mean, he can make the free throws when he gets there, which is nice for a big, but doesn't really get there. And then even with defensive rebounding, I'm like, I mean, I get that Sabonis is there, but Sabonis wasn't always there. And his rebounding percentage, defensive rebounding rate, it's like hovered around, his career is 20%, which is not great, man. There's a couple of things with his game that I just don't feel totally right about. I mean, I think on paper, you can look at it as a 3-point shooting big man, even block shots. And he's 24 years old. He's his contract is secured and it's reasonable. But it's just something about his offensive game throws me off. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm judging too harshly, because it's not like offensively most centers give you that much anyway.
Yeah.
But he's just kind of neutral to me. I mean, if he got his 3-point shot down more, which I don't see a reason why he couldn't, I think he's always been a good free throw shooter, and he's developed that three steadily throughout his career. So if you can get him to be a better 3-point shooter, then maybe we look at his game entirely differently. But there's just something, I don't know, there's just something missing about Miles.
I'm totally with you on like his rim finishing. I think that is a big issue as a big man. I think it's just something you need. And the weird part is, like, the first two seasons, he was like close to 70% at the rim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like the last three seasons, he's close to like, he's like around 65. So that's a big drop off. So I think,
I mean, listen, I'm going to need you to shoot better than Norman Powell at the rim.
Norm was our best rim finisher pretty much this season, man.
It was unbelievable.
It's pretty much between him and OG.
Man, he's gonna make such a great trade piece. I mean,
so yeah, I think what would be interesting with Miles is like, why would you give up the assets now? I almost feel like keep the flexibility. If you're able to sign, you know, a major free agent, then you go ahead and upgrade, right?
Right. I mean, but he might be gone before then, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean,
Indiana's already sitting on two centers. They're already kind of – it's kind of eating into Turner's value a little bit because Sabonis has progressed to the point that he is, right? He's going to play out of position, so –
Yeah, I hear that. I just don't know how much to buy into the rumor because I felt like it was just kind of a throwaway line in that. I mean, all due respect to Jared Weiss, the Athletic. He said, like, Oladipo was looking to move on. And then he kind of just threw Turner in there and was like, oh, he might be in the same boat. You know, it wasn't like.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think Turner's gettable because they have two centers and they need to move one.
Yeah.
That one's just straightforward. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, no, listen, if we're talking about fit with Giannis, you know, he's, again, like I just mentioned, he's Brook Lopez-y. You know, like him and Brook kind of play a similar profile. And yeah, I mean, Brook has the more of a post game, but he doesn't really use it much. You know, that could work. That could work. And he's young. He could still
grow up
a little bit. Yeah.
I would love Miles Turner on the reps.
Yeah,
make all the pieces fit.
I was going to say, out of the four people we talked about in terms of Victor, Buddy, Miles, and Montrez, I think Miles, his fit probably is the best one. Victor, I think, has the most upside. I think that's not that hard to figure out. But, I wouldn't mind that one. In terms of just wrapping up this show, then, let's look at the sort of the Raptors by position moving forward, right? You have the five positions. I think you got – can agree that the most secure one is power forward. You know, you have Pascal signed to a max contract. He just made the all-NBA team. He's an all-star player. He's shown he's going to defend. He's going to improve offensively. He's going to work hard. You know, you're as set as you could really possibly be at the power forward position. There are some other questions in terms of the long-term future. Let's start at the point guard position. So we'll skip power forward. We'll go through the rest of the positions. Point guard, assuming you re-sign Fred, that should be a pretty secure position. But, you know, I guess the questions I have is, what do you do with Kyle long-term? And, you know, is Terrence Davis a point guard long-term?
I think for me, I might be in the minority in terms of thinking that Kyle still got a few seasons at a high level left.
Okay.
I think everyone's, you know, I feel like people are jumping the gun on like, oh, it's time to move on. Yeah. You know, this was his
last. Bro, I did this in like 2017, man. So,
because I really think he just, you know, he takes great care of his body. Mm. And, you know, you can look at his age all you want. I think when you make the comparisons to point guards of the past and, oh, this, you know, these size point guards have never lasted before. Well, those size point guards also never had this level of sports science and ability to, you know, take care of their nutrition and all of that. And so I think Kyle does all the right things from that standpoint. And that's why I think he honestly has, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he made the All-Star team, you know, two or three more times.
Yeah. And also, you know, I've raised that point in the past about sort of like 6 foot guards, long-term scoring. It's true. There's a very small historical precedent, but I mean, realistically, the way the game is played now, there's so much 3-point shooting that you can, like, Kyle's going to get half his points from just threes. Like, he's going to make three threes. That's already 9 points. And I think, you know, that's going to help prolong people's careers as well. But yeah, I agree with you. I think really the question is, I mean, I think as Raptor fans, I speak for everybody when I say that, you know, we all want Kyle here as long as possible. We want Kyle to retire here. It's really just a question of how much money can you afford to give Kyle in 2021 when his contract is up, and how much Kyle is willing to take that money versus, you know, going elsewhere and maximizing his career earnings or maximizing his chance of winning a title. I mean, I think if Giannis comes, I think he'll probably just stay because I think that the chance at a title is so, valuable. But, you know, who really quite knows? But the other question is with Terrence Davis, man. Do you think he's a point guard going forward or not? Because I remember talking to him in preseason and stuff like that, and he was telling me how just they want to develop him as a point guard. He's not really – he's newer to that position. And we saw throughout the course of the year, he kind of moved away from that shooting guard position point guard to more of a shooting guard position. I would even say McCaw played more point than Terrence did. Obviously, Fred and Kyle there as well. Do you think, you know, TD is still moving in that point guard direction?
I don't think so. I still haven't seen enough to think his best role isn't, you know, playing off ball and attacking off initial penetration. And I think that's something the Raptors do need to look to address. I don't know if they look to do it in this year's draft, where if you can get, you know, I don't want to say traditional point guard, but if you can get someone who who's just, you know, attacking the basket and creating for others just comes naturally to them, I think that's sort of the best fit at that position. And it allows Terrence to be at his best. So I wouldn't write Terrence off, but I do think his best, you get the most out of him if he's playing off ball and attacking off initial creation.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, I also think, look, as a point guard, I'm just going to need you to be like exceptional making decisions, right? And Fred's a really heady player. Kyle's a really heady player. TD, he's a young player, so you don't really quite know yet. But to me, the instincts aren't necessarily fully there for him to be a pure point guard. He's probably a combo guard. I think he already is kind of a combo guard right now, with the combo being heavily skewed towards that shooting guard skill set rather than that point guard skill set. But yeah, I agree. I wouldn't necessarily look at him as a point guard. So, I mean, in the shooting guard position then, so you, at least for next season, you have, I mean, presumably you have whoever one of Kyle or Fred is, you know, playing the shooting guard position. You have Norm, who is definitely a very solid backup. And then you have Matt Thomas and Pat McCaw. And of course, you could throw TD in this position as well. So I honestly think, just in terms of depth, they actually have a lot of depth at shooting guard, but all very different options. Let's start with Matt Thomas. What do you think Matt Thomas's path is to actually cracking the rotation on a significant basis? Is there one, you know what I mean?
The path with Nick Nurse is always defense, right? And so I think he made some strides from the beginning of the season, where, you know, I thought he was the chicken with his head cut off, to, you know, just understanding Nurse's zone schemes. And I think that's something that Nick recognized too. It's just, hey, it's probably easier to just go zone while he's on the court. And I thought he did well there. I think there were situations where, you know, he was defending Chris Middleton and held his own, and that's something that he got confidence from. I'm surprised whenever I look him up and I see that he's 6'5". I feel like, you know, every time I look at him on the court, he's like max 6'2". But I think, you know, at that size, you just want him to continue to do what he's doing offensively, because I think what he does, where people chase him off the 3-point line and he takes that step inside and knocks down the mid-range J, I think that's really valuable. There were times where, you know, he kept probing off the dribble and was able to find an open man. I think that I think he's a really high IQ basketball player, and so I think that will help him come around on defensive schemes as well, because all rookies, you know, whether you're coming from Europe, whether you're coming from college, whatever it is, defensively, that first year is really tough.
Oh yeah, definitely. Cause you just don't have the kind of athletes who are as quick and as fast and as explosive and as big as there are in the NBA. There just isn't, man. Like, that's the biggest difference on top of the fact that the skill set is just different. Like, come on, man. You know, yeah. There's no Pascals in Valencia, man.
So I think the strides that he showed from, you know, day one of the 2019-20 season to where he was by the end of the bubble, the fact that Nurse trusted him enough to put him into a game seven, and arguably should have trusted him a bit more.
Yeah.
And maybe given him a look in the second half. I think that's something that you can carry over into this season and say, yeah, when things are starting to look a little stagnant, Matt Thomas can really give you something. And those are the pockets where he best fits. Like Nick Nurse did in the playoffs. And I always go back to, even in the bubble, there was the game where they got blown out by the Celtics and they really couldn't make an open shot. And then the very next game they played Memphis. And again, they started out the game really struggling to hit from the outside. And that's when Nick Nurse went to Matt Thomas. And Matt Thomas came in, knocked down a couple threes, And all of a sudden the Raptors caught fire. And Nick Nurse said after the game, it's like, yeah, it didn't matter who it was. We just needed to see someone put the ball in the basket.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt Thomas can always do that.
Mm-hmm.
Very ironic that he made 99 threes this season.
Didn't even know that, man. That's crazy.
And so, yeah, I think next year there's definitely a path to more playing time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I really trust that he puts in the work. He's talked before about how the Raptors gave him film on like different guys that he can emulate. I don't think we have to, you know, make wild guesses to assume who those guys would be.
Yep.
I definitely think there is a path to more minutes for Matt Thomas.
Yeah. One thing I like about it, you mentioned that, you know, he can, you know, when guys really close out hard, and guys are always going to close out hard, he can step into that mid-range. This man shot 62% from 16 to three-point arc. That's unbelievable. And a lot of those are like bank shots, because you know he loves that little bank shot when he floats.
He was so good at it, that sounds low.
Yeah, that is true. You're right, actually. Come on, Matt, get your weight up. No, but I mean, I honestly think in terms of the way he can kind of grow his game, you know, obviously JJ Redick is always mentioned. But even a guy like Seth Curry, because I feel like there's a mold of like undersized guard that shoots really well, but can play make just a little bit, right? I'm thinking of guys like Patty Mills also fits this category. You know, I would say Seth Curry fits this category too. He's probably the premium version of it, but a guy who can play make just a little bit, create just a little bit, make a couple of reads, definitely playing off ball, but because of that threat of their movement, because of the threat of their shooting, they can be a positive contributor and they can be a solid bench piece. And that's what I kind of feel like Matt could be doing. I mean, even JJ Redick back in the day, he kind of did that too. He had a little bit of assisting in his game. And I could see him, you know, he works really hard. He's developing the handle. You know, we all know Matt Thomas propaganda hour. So, I mean, I'm hoping he, you know, just moves up a little bit. I think realistically, the rotation is just kind of crowded right now anyway at the guard position. You have Kyle, Fred, they're going to play a lot of minutes. Norm is going to play a lot of minutes because he's legitimately better than Matt. And so Matt's kind of that fourth guy right now, and there's a cap to how much he can play there. What about a guy like McCaw? Are you giving up on McCaw yet?
Because
I felt like, honestly, quite honestly, at times I was looking at that Celtics series, and I'm like, McCaw would have done – I kind of miss McCaw a little bit in that Celtics series. Did you feel that way or no?
I'm with you. With you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'm with you. First off, I don't think we can finish a Matt Thomas segment and not give a shout out to Alex. So shout out.
Listen, that is the path. That is the path. You hire Alex Wong as your agent without telling anybody, and then he can just get up here like Kendrick Perkins does for LeBron James and just you know, spews propaganda. Like, we've already been doing that for free. Sign us up. Anyway, keep on.
Yeah, man. I feel like with Pat McCaw, again, I think his window is the fact that, again, Terrence Davis likes to play off ball.
Mm.
So if you have some of those bench units where he's able to run it, not that he's a great playmaker in himself, but, you know, we saw at times where Nick Nurse just sort of had him be that initial ball handler and just to get the play going.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that's where he sort of fits in. And then Nick loves him, man. So he's going to be back and he's going to get minutes. Defensively, he's solid. Again, that's why, you know, when people look at why wasn't Terrence playing more during the regular season, why was Patrick McCaw getting these minutes? Nick Nurse just sets a standard of, hey, this is where you have to be defensively and nothing is handed to you, right?
Yep.
Because and we saw, frankly, Michael Malone, till he didn't have a choice in the playoffs, like through the regular season, he wasn't willing to give MPJ minutes.
Yep.
Because it's sort of setting that precedent, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you tell a player early on in their career that, hey, you can be this bad defensively and I'm still going to give you minutes,
yeah,
then nothing's really going to drive them to get better on that end.
That's pretty much how most of the Raptors prospects from, like, I don't know, up until Masai came here, like, that's how all of them failed. Like,
yeah.
Chris Bosh, Andrea, Terrence Davis, or Terrence Ross, like, Yeah, a whole bunch of them. I mean, some of those guys are just weren't good, like Joey Graham, but like
DeMar.
I was gonna say, yeah, that's the biggest example right there. So yeah, no, that's a good point for sure.
So yeah, I think that's something that, you know, Terrence will look at as well and say, hey, okay, that's my competition that I gotta show that I can at least be on that level defensively, and then it's a no brainer, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Obviously Terrence gives you way more on the other end.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I still don't mind Makov, man, as a guy who can kind of play a basically a Marc Gasol game, but in the backcourt, it is still valuable. I think it's just harder to do because you really have to be great defensively. And I don't think he's great defensively. He pressures the ball a little bit, but I don't know. I'm interested to see what Makov does next year. I mean, obviously he's going to be in the rotation because Nick's going to be coaching.
So that's the thing, right? It's like, I like having him as an option on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like the fact that him being on the roster instantly means that he's going to be a rotation piece playing 20 plus minutes a game.
Like, right.
There was a point in the season where he was averaging the same number of minutes as Serge Ibaka. And it was
Yeah, no, that's true, man. He's like a, he's like a, I don't know. He's like a fringe condiment that people put everywhere. Like, you know, I like how people put ketchup on everything. Like that's, I have no issues with ketchup specifically, but if you're going to put ketchup on absolutely everything, then, you know, something's wrong with you. Or even Sriracha, actually. When people got too hype about Sriracha. Look, I want to support Asians, but Sriracha's not that good, man. Come on. The way some of y'all be eating Sriracha is disgusting. All right? So Pat McCaw is like Sriracha in that sense. Two more positions, a small forward and center. Small forward, they don't really have a lot of depth at small forward. I mean, I think OG obviously provides you with that starting caliber player. I think he showed enough in the playoffs. I think the Raptors really believe in him. Masai has spoken really positively and glowingly about OG, his Nigerian son, but he's extension eligible. I think realistically we're going to keep OG moving forward. My only real question is, does OG provide enough offense at the position? And if not, then are you going to have to look for it from elsewhere in the lineup? So sort of, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on OG's like offensive ceiling moving forward, because I think that is kind of important. I think defensively he's going to play, he's going to start. It's pretty clear, but yeah, offensively, you know.
Yeah, offensively, I've said this now a few times during the playoffs and after. I don't know what you think. Where I think before the bubble, I thought his ceiling was more a Trevor Ariza type.
Mm.
And after the bubble, just seeing how much his handle improved, just seeing him take advantage of post-up situations and getting the ball inside, his finishing could still be better in terms of just going up the first time, that type of thing. But the power he's able to show there, I almost view his offensive ceiling now more like a Ron Artest.
Mm.
And, you know, if he can get to that point, there were a couple of times he was able to knock down that mid-range J as well.
Yeah.
And so if those elements are added to his game where, you know, maybe he doesn't quite hit the ceiling of Artest, like an all-star, you know, averaging pretty much 20 points a game. But I think he can, I think he can be a solid offensive piece. And I would like to, in the same way the Raptors just explored what Pascal could be last year, and they will do it again this coming year, I want this to be that kind of year for OG.
Right.
Absolutely. Let's sort of give him the keys, not to the whole offense, just, you know, when those opportunities present to himself, it's like, hey man, go to work, go do your thing. Like, you know, I think, you know, I thought it was really cool. I don't know if you remember this from the Celtics series, but there was one moment where OG got the ball at the top of the arc and he was calling Mark to set a screen.
Mm.
And Mark just looked at him and he was like, go.
Yeah.
And then OG just took, I don't know if it was if it was Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, but he got a bucket out of it. And those are the type of things where I'd like to see I'd like to see that happen more often this upcoming season, where it's like he's got the ball, it's like show confidence in him to go create a bucket for himself. Because I don't even think he's like the selfish type where, you know, he's just going to be one track minded going to the basket, right? Like, I think there were times where even with that spin move, if that second body came over, he was dishing it back out. And yeah. So I like the offensive elements of his game. And I'd be very open to, you know, exploring as much as I can this coming season.
Yeah, I think it'll be a big kind of like prove it kind of year for OG anyway, because if they don't hammer out that extension, which for cap reasons, they might not do it.
Yeah,
more than sort of how they believe in OG. If they don't do that, then it's a big prove it year for OG in the sense that, you know, it's a contract year. And it's in the Raptors' best interest to kind of figure out what they have with OG in the first place, right? And give them that chance to use more of the offense. We saw him being used as a screener, which was interesting. You don't really see that as much, but Nick Nurse has talked about that. He wants to see OG handling and setting in the pick and roll setting. So I think there's growth there. Again, he's one of the youngest guys on the roster. There's not a real backup small forward I'm comfortable with, I guess, on the team. I guess you have Stanley there. You have... I don't think Rondé's coming back. I just feel like Rondé could get
Bubble Stanley, bro. Bubble Stanley.
Bubble Stanley, baby. Hitting game winners, you know. But, you know, maybe Paul Watson. But realistically, I don't think they're going to bring in too much small forward help this year, I think. Yeah. And then so really the center position then. So you got Mark and Serge, obviously. Even if they are re-signed, they're short-term solutions. And then, you know. I don't want to ask you about Mark and Serge because everyone's going to ask about that. What do you think about Boucher as a long-term piece? Is he long-term backup, long-term starter? Actually, I don't know what a long-term backup even is, actually, to be honest. That doesn't even make any sense. But
long-term backup? That's Reggie Evans, no?
I used to get so hyped when Reggie Evans got like 20 rebounds for the Raptors. I'm like, I don't care. We're down 25. Reggie Evans has 25 rebounds. 10 of them are offensive rebounds on his own misses.
Oh, man, how far we've come. But,
bro, I was watching Reggie Evans on CBC on a Sunday where the Raptors would be up in the first half and then blow the lead in the second half.
CBC games, man. That was wild.
That's when Matt Devlin said Punjabi.
Yep.
That's
Stojakovic.
Yeah.
Peja. Punjabi. What a moment.
What a legend, man. A legend.
Shout out Parminder.
Definitely. My good friend Parminder. Shout out Leo Rollins for being like, huh, Punjabi, eh? That's because you have to, as the color commentator there, you have to follow up, man. You can't just be laughing, right? You gotta be professional.
Yeah.
So yeah, Boucher. Yeah.
I think the question is he open to being a long term sort of backup option? Specifically, is he open to being a long-term third stringer? Because I don't know if he's still good enough to be a legitimate backup option.
Maybe on a playoff team, probably not. But I think he showed enough in limited minutes this year that he can do that elsewhere, man.
That's exactly what I mean. If you want to be a backup option on a mediocre to bad team. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, your long-term outlook with the Raptors isn't looking great.
Right.
But if, you know, you want to be a part of this organization and continue and, you know, not know where your minutes will come from and know that you're really going to play only if there's an injury, then this is the place for you. But if you're looking for more minutes, which I think he has every right to, just for himself to explore what he can be as a backup big. And I think there's enough teams in the league who would have been enticed by what he was able to do this season to give him that opportunity and say, you know, here's, you know, 18, 20 minutes a game. Let's see what you can do and go from there. I definitely think he should pursue that option. I don't think the Raptors should give him that option.
I mean, look, as with all things Boucher, I'm just going to refrain from commenting, but I'm just going to agree with what you said. Okay, so then long-term solutions, you know, this is where the Raptors have, I think, the least long-term viability here. Because I don't know if any of those three centers are going to be on the roster next year. And then if you look at the pipeline, DeJuan Hernandez, you know, pretty much missed all of the year rehabbing. To me, he's not even physically big enough to play center, I don't think. Or if he is, he's not going to be defensively solid, which is going to hurt the Raptors. So I have no idea. This is a complete question mark. They need to probably bring back one of those three centers, if not two of those three centers. Yeah. And if they don't, then they need to trade for somebody or sign somebody, because, like, bro, it's barren.
Miles Turner, baby.
Okay, all right, Miles Turner. There we go. We already discussed it. So
no, I mean, I still think, you know, even though the Lakers' run has shown the value of the big again, and I mean, let's face it.
I mean, you know, they've shown the value of Anthony freaking Davis.
Yeah.
If you can get bigs like Anthony Davis, 100%. Give me five Anthony Davises, please.
Yeah. I think even with those performances, I think there's still enough value to be found on like minimum contracts where you kind of just take a flyer.
Right.
You know, and again, you know, nothing would change my approach to this offseason in terms of looking at it as a stopgap year where nothing you do, you know, gets in the way of 2021 and the plans that you've, because you've done so much to this point to set up the books.
Yeah, yeah. You don't just give that up, man.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're not going to throw it away at this point. So whether it's, you know, a minimum contract of bring back Bismack Biyombo for a year and you just roll with that and, you know, let it just be a fun season. Although Bismack without the fans would be a shame.
Yeah, it would, really would be, man. You'd just be screaming to nobody. No one's collectively groaning when he misses free throws or breaking layups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think at the center position, if you can't, let's face it, Mark, you know, even though nothing's confirmed yet, it seems to be lining up that he's going to move on. I wouldn't rule it out.
What do you think of the January transfer window for Marc Gasol? we're not going to confirm it until Fabrizio Romano tweets it out on Twitter.
Bro, I'll take him over Harry Maguire any day right now.
Yeah, honestly, man. This is not the time for Liverpool to gloat about defenses. We've been kind of horrid on that front too, but yeah, no, it's bad, man. It's bad. Yeah, before we end the podcast, man, you want to have a little quick EPL chat? What's going on, man?
Of course, man. Of course.
Yeah, so you're United.
Yeah.
Rumors are they're in talks maybe to replace Ollie. You know, there's a certain former Spurs manager out there that, you know, maybe has been linked to United in the past, may still be out of a job right now and may join you guys. Obviously, that's Mauricio Pochettino. What do you think there? Would that be an upgrade for you guys? Like, what do you guys need, man? Because United looks kind of weird right now, to be honest. You guys have been looking weird for the last couple of years. Let's be real.
I mean, we definitely need central defenders. I think the way you
build. So hold on. Paying £80 million for Harry Maguire wasn't enough, huh?
I mean, that's the thing, though. It's not about how much we're paying. It's who we're paying.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
Like, people criticized the money that was paid for Virgil van Dijk when that transfer happened, saying, oh, man, this is the most money ever paid for a center back and this and that. No one's complaining now.
No.
So it's just about finding the right guy. And, you know, I think, you know, Lindelof is like a backup secondary center back.
Yeah, he's good enough to play on the team, but just not start every week.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we got a lot of holes to fill. I'm not too mad at the transfer window. Like, if they had center backs in mind that they just couldn't get anywhere near in terms of evaluation, then it is what it is.
Were you guys even linked to any, though? Like Ruben Diaz. Like, oh, yeah, like, it felt like City was trying to buy one for, you know, the whole summer, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the frustrating part, that all the links seem to be to wingers and forwards, and it's like there's this clear deficiency at the back.
Yeah.
Was there not a single rumor about a center back? So that part of it was frustrating. So, yeah, I think Ole, tactically, you can see there's a ceiling.
Okay.
But that's the thing. I almost view him like a Dwayne Casey, where it's like,
roll the ball out there. Let the talent decide it.
I think he's the right man for right now, because this team is not good enough to get to that level.
Mm.
And I don't know when that point is going to come for United where they're willing to really shell out for a manager, because they half did that with Van Gaal. They half did that with Jose.
Yeah.
Again, they've half done it with Solskjaer. So, yeah, I think the biggest problem is Ed Woodward, man. Like, you can't have a businessman making football decisions. That's the biggest problem. Get a football director. Then I'll start to believe that they're serious about winning the title again.
Yeah, it's a management restructuring kind of thing.
Yeah.
You guys. I agree, man. But, you know, you guys have a lot of attacking talent. Like, I wouldn't be too down on you guys just right. I think Bruno was a good signing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think we've done enough to just compete for a top four spot again, right? Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the lack of ambition is, you know, a little jarring. So what, Alex Telles is going to replace Luke Shaw? What's going on there?
Yeah, Telles looks like he'll be on the left. And then I think Cavani will give good competition to Martial.
Yeah, why do you guys have this habit of just signing random strikers that are old? This has happened a couple of times. Falcao, you know, Ibra. I thought Ibra actually worked out okay.
Ibra played great.
Yeah,
he just sucked that he got injured.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cause,
and he came back from it now, man. Shout out to Ibra, man. Because this man can't even – he's really not moving that well at all at age 38. But, no, that's the real year 17, hashtag year 17. Because he's carrying AC Milan right now.
This man got COVID and said COVID got Zlatan. Like,
yeah, you know, we did make jokes when Trump said that. But when Zlatan said it, we were like, no, this is great.
So, yeah, I think Cavani is good for this group.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because it's so young, right? And he has so much experience that he will help them develop.
Bro, and he's like a really ideal option because he's – okay, his finishing, I admittedly, is a little bit off sometimes. It feels like he's a little wasteful, but good in the air. He's physical enough to play in the Prem for sure. And he's still young enough where he can make an impact. I didn't hate that signing. I don't know why people hate – I guess people wanted Jadon Sancho so bad, and they're like, oh, wow, here's – a 32-year-old striker, totally different. But
I definitely think that's it. It's like everyone wanted Sancho, and it's like, where did Cavani come from?
Yeah. No, but seriously, where did he come from, though, bro? Because it was like randomly out of nowhere. They're like, oh, yeah, we're just bringing him in. What do you think of the Prem otherwise? Because it's right now it's like a record amount of scoring. I was listening to a podcast. I think they said this is the most goals – scored through, I think, week four, since like the 1930s. Like, there's just between all the penalties being assigned, and of course, like, okay, why do you think the defenses are so bad across the league? Because you're looking at City's looking bad defensively, Liverpool was great defensively last year, looking really shaky defensively this year, United's shaky defensively, Chelsea looking shaky defensively. Why do you think defense is at such a premium right now, man?
I think, to some extent, the game has sort of lost its way.
What do you mean?
Defensively, where you're with all the penalties that have been given.
Yeah.
You've basically told defenders that anything in the box.
Yeah.
Is pretty much going to be called, like, any small violation. Mm. And so, especially with the handball stuff, like when defenders can't run in a normal motion, like, that's what they're getting handled.
Yo, but you can't jump. Like, how are you just going to defend a set piece if you can't jump?
Exactly.
Like, right? Look at the Eric Dier handball. That's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, they're saying that's an unnatural motion. No, when you're jumping up and you're like,
you trying use to your arms to propel jump, yourself. Yeah, yeah.
That is a natural position.
Yeah.
So I don't understand where the disconnect is in terms of them not understanding that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there are more defenders that are more wary of that. And so when you're always defending scared, I think it's just going to make the situation worse.
Yeah.
And so until that gets sorted, I feel like this is how it is. And then I think there is something to, like, again, now every game being like a pickup game, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's the no intensity fans. Is just weird, man.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just not as locked in.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that some of the teams that are coming up right now are just, like, really different. I think over time, I think Everton's going to cool off a little bit. Like, they're starting off really hot.
Leeds is super exciting, man.
Yeah, Leeds. I mean, Leeds is coming in with a new energy. Like, it feels like what Norwich tried to do, but, like, way better.
Yeah.
So they're exciting, but I think the teams will adjust to them a little bit because they're a little bit new. And I think similarly for Aston Villa, too. I mean, like, they were there last year. I think what they fought and fought off relegation and stuff like that. But they made some good signings. And
yeah,
I don't know. For Liverpool, though, man, the high line's got to stop, man. I can't see all these guys at like,
you can't like do it
40 yards away from the net, man. Like, it's just too many transition breaks, because especially with the we always have our wing backs all the way up the pitch too. Like, it's just asking a lot, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, fun season though, man. Prem's always interesting. Always interesting,
goals, man. It's a lot of goals. It's a lot of penalties.
It's gonna be interesting, man.
It's a different game.
It's a whole new game, as Issa Rae tells us 25 times per broadcast.
We brought it back, baby.
Yeah, there you go. All right, V. Appreciate you for coming on as always. What do you got going on? What do you got to plug? What's going on, man? I know you got a secret project in the works. I don't know if you want to plug that yet, but
not yet.
Okay, all right.
I'm doing a couple things for Complex.
Yep.
One is almost like a, you know, lessons we learned about the Raptors over the course of the bubble. Okay. And it's not just in terms of what the Raptors did, right? In terms of what other teams did. So I'll have that coming soon. And then I'll have like a who's staying index coming out after that. You can check that all out on Complex. Besides that, you can just follow me on Twitter at Vivek M. Jacob.
Yeah,
there'll be other things coming.
Cricket, tennis. Bro, you gotta expand even more, man. I wanna see you out here with ping pong takes, you know. I don't know.
That's not gonna happen.
No?
Ping pong is not gonna happen.
Come on, bro. Expand to the Asian audience, man.
Maybe badminton.
Oh man, even I can't even get in that much into badminton, man.
Nah, I think I'm good, man.
Yeah, you're saturated, bro. You're the only one I know that watches every single product that the Zone puts out, man. This man's out here watching Formula One. I'm probably you're a real sicko, man. But no, I appreciate you coming on as always. And the listeners, I'll be back with more of the Finalist Reaction podcast, and looking forward to making more content through the off season for the Raptors, man. It should be not that busy of a summer, but enough interesting things going on. So look out for that. So thanks everyone for listening, and I'll be back next week.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.